Text me or come to order. Thank you, Margaret, for flipping that switch. Members, text me or come to order. We're going to first announce that Representative Coles has requested that his bill be taken up, I don't know, next week. So if you're here for Representative Coles' bill, he requested to have it not heard tonight. We're now going to go to Representative Hornstein. We don't even have a quorum, but Representative Hornstein, tell us about your bill. We'll move it when we have a quorum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 4078 is a new improved version of a bill you heard and passed last year. It's the capital project bonding request for Met Transit and Met Council. And there are a couple of very minor changes, updates from last year. If you're interested, Madam Chair, in hearing about those, I have Mr. Shetman. If not, this is very similar to what you passed last year. This is the bill that Representative Abrams used to carry for many years back when he served in the legislature.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hornstein, for that. Members, just to recall, this provision was in the public finance bill last year. It's a little, ever so slightly different. I tried to tell Representative Hornstein you did not need a hearing because all bills are alive from last biennium because they're in the specs in the committee, but I guess there are a couple small changes, and if Mr. Shetman wants to tell us them,
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. We did have to make one minor change. We changed it from in the tax bill you passed earlier this year. You had an amount for $33.6 million that applied to 2008, which was fantastic. This year is the $33 million that we missed out in the 2017. So that is why we just had to reduce it from 33.6 to 33 to be consistent with not raising property tax.
Okay.
That is the only
thing. Thank you for that clarification. Are there questions for Representative Hornstein or his testifier? Okay, if not, I can't formally lay this over because we haven't moved it yet, but is there anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against House File 4078? Okay, if not, Representative Hornstein, Representative Simpson has a question. Representative Simpson.
Well, just a comment. Representative Hornstein, obviously you haven't been in front of this tax committee too many times that you would want to come here on something you don't have to come here for.
Representative Hornstein?
Well, Madam Chair, President Simpson, I'm a stickler for process. I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows, you know, what's in the bill, and so that's why I insisted on coming before the committee.
Nicely done. Nice answer. Thank you for that. Representative Simpson, thank you. Further comments or questions? If not, thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair and members.
Okay, we'll move it when we can.
Okay.
And then if we may go to, I don't know what Representative Morgan worked out with Representative Yarrow. Representative Yarrow.
Was your bill controversial? I mean,
we promised Representative Yarrow to be first because he's got people here from Duluth. So, okay, Representative Yarrow. I think Representative Morgan is saying.
Okay.
So, Representative Yarrow, let's get started on House File 4127. We still don't have a quorum, but we want to hear your bill and get another public finance provision related to the school district in Duluth. Representative Yarrow.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House File, thank you. I move that the bill be considered for, as amended, I guess there's an amendment to limit it just to make sure that for school district 709 Duluth.
Okay, we'll take that motion formally when we can. We don't have a quorum, but yes, Representative Yaros's bill is, I think, statewide, and he's gonna try to just have us think about it for his part of the state here. So, Representative Yaros, your bill. Representative Yaros, we have a quorum. So, Representative Yaros moves House File 4127 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and now Representative Yaros moves the A2 amendment, H4127, A2 amendment, to make this just pertain to his school district. Is there a discussion to the amendment? If not, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Yarrow.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, when I requested the bill, Madam Chair and members, I thought it was going to be just for Duluth, but a couple of school districts that are as large as Duluth contacted me, and I told them that I would make sure that it's only meant to be for Duluth. Madam Chair and members, House File 4127, I introduced it reluctantly. In my 32 years on and off service in the legislature, I have only done this twice. The first time was when the previous board, about a dozen years ago, made a contract with Edison Charter Schools out of Boca Raton, Florida. Boca Raton means rat's mouth, Florida. And that company, for-profit company, runs schools for profit. And I thought that schools, whether they're public or private, should not be for profit. This is the second time, and as I said, I do it reluctantly. I was hoping that we'd be able to work it out locally. And what the bill does, it simply modifies the purchase agreement between Duluth School District and Johnson Controls Corporation. And it says that the district may not levy for lease purchase for other purposes without authorization through an election. The school district used about three different statutes. One of them was dealing with segregation, desegregation, and one with public safety and health issues. I don't think our schools are segregated, nor are they unsafe and unhealthy. If they were, they would be closed. The school district is closing some good schools, putting new schools, and some old ones that I think can be fixed. I'm a liberal, but I believe in preserving things. When my house that I bought about 10 years ago, had a heating inefficient old furnace and bad roofs and some other things, we didn't close it. We didn't abandon it. We just fixed it. I think that the old school buildings can be fixed, and they can last. They will last longer than any new buildings that are built. My district is the third poorest district in the state. And we have, last year, I appreciate that you helped us to solve our city retiree health care cost, which was in the $300 million deficit. We have sewer overruns, raw sewer flowing into Lake Superior and St. Louis Bay. EPA and TCA are threatening that they're not going to let us build anymore if we don't take care of that problem. That's a multi-million dollar problem. And I think that our school district, although I think that they should close some schools and fix others, but I don't think it should be at over $400 million with principal and interest. Our district just cannot afford it, and I hope that you can help me resolve this problem. As I said, I wish it could have been resolved locally.
Thank you, Representative Yaros, who would you
there's a couple of people that signed up. We had a group led by Harry Welty, the late Let the Loose Vote. That vote in the school board lost 4-3, and it wasn't put on the ballot. And then Gary Glass, who's a school board member at large, and Mary Murphy may want to say something too, if it's up to her.
Okay, and Representative Yaros and everybody who's here in the committee, I should tell you, we want to take testimony from people both for and against, and we know people are here from Duluth both for and against. I do want to mention that Representative Yaros has, just so folks know on the record here, that Representative Yaros does feel pretty badly about this bill and has mentioned that to me many times, and has felt that he's been a strong supporter of the Duluth schools, yet is concerned about some of the scrutiny and the spending at this level. And so I think members should note that we have other legislators locally here in the audience because it's very important to them. And I think this is something we do need to take a look at and see if we need further review and we need to act or if we need to not act. But we do need to pay close attention because it's difficult for all the local legislators to be divided and be trying to work with their community. They're very strong supporters of their schools, but they kind of have disparate views. So we do want to hear Representative Yaros' testimony, but to that point, Representative Earhart?
Madam Chair, does this apply only to the Duluth School District?
Yes, he has amended it now, so it's a Duluth issue.
Okay.
But it's a public finance provision for the tax bill,
okay,
if we would choose to act on it. So welcome, whoever Representative Yaros is referencing should join us first. Please come down and...
The superintendent and the school board chair is here too.
Okay.
And some other people.
Anybody, for or against?
Okay.
So, I've received a lot of email, so I know there's folks who have thoughts on this issue, so please, come forward.
Okay, we'll take the proponents first then, huh?
Whatever you'd like, Representative Yaros.
Okay. They're at a disadvantage. Whoever speaks last has more impact.
Well, then we'll let you speak last. Okay, welcome. And if you could just give us your name for the tape. And
Carolyn Chesky, members of the tax committee, thank you very much for giving us an opportunity to speak. My name is Harry Welty. To introduce myself very briefly, I think I should begin by saying that as a Republican, I twice challenged Mike Yaros for the job that he has now. And I come to you today as an unqualified champion for Mr. Yaros. Representative Yaros is doing exactly what the public in Duluth wishes him to do, and I'm rather grateful, although it's 30 years later, that he defeated me back in the 1970s. I have managed to win elections. I served 2 terms, 8 years on the Duluth School Board, during a time following a great deal of financial crises in the district, and helped bring the school district to some financial resolutions. And so I am quite familiar with the time leading up to what we not so affectionately call the Red Plan, which is a $407 million construction project our school district has dreamed up. You can see the sign in front of us that we have had about 1,000 of all over the school district last fall during the election season. We amended it to read $437 million, accounting the interest, and this one does not reflect that change. While I was on the board during the fiscal crisis, I was a champion for closing a school, and the reason was because we were in a tight spot. I thought 3 schools were excessive, and we knew that we could save about $1 million by going to 2 high schools. So the idea behind going to fewer high schools was to save money. I think most of the community was shocked when we heard about the Red Plan, the $437 million plan, because it is a plan to go to 2 high schools, and it shocked me the thought that we would have to spend $250 million to close a school when I had originally thought we would save about $1 million a year by going to 2 schools. I am also appalled that it has been sold on the basis that our school board did not maintain buildings, because while that may have been true in the past, starting about 1989, our district, and through 8 of the years that I served on it, began putting an extra $2 million into maintenance of old buildings at the public's demand. And now we are being told, because we neglected those buildings, we must now tear down a great many of them and rebuild new. I want to tell you that the public agrees with us and with Representative Yaros when we circulated a petition that had been forced in law last fall, begging the school board to please put this up to a vote. We were finding that 8 or 9 of every 10 people we approached gladly signed it. Even those people who were in favor of the Red Plan felt that it was something that the school board ought to do. The petition fell on deaf ears with our school board, which had no legal reason to pay attention to it. There was, however, one indirect vote, and that concerned the at-large city school district race, in which Gary Glass, an ardent opponent to the Red Plan and a person desirous of a vote, won with an overwhelming 60% of the vote. Since that time, more and more of the public is paying attention because, of course, the tax statements have come out, and we have gotten a renewed demand for a public vote that this school board, under this legislation that exists now, is able to ignore. So that in a recent poll by the Duluth News Tribune, 65% of the people, of several hundred people responding to it, said they wished to have Mike Yaros's bill, 4127, passed. All of these are evidences of a school district in crisis, because the school board has refused to listen to it so much that now citizens are going to the city council and the state legislature begging for some sort of redress. Perhaps the most offensive thing about the building plan that we are now facing is that it will divide Duluth as it has never been divided before along 14th Avenue East. All the people to the east going to the well-heeled school with very few minority students, and all those to the west going to what will become, in essence, the school for minority and poor children. And that is the district that Representative Giles represents. The cruel irony of this is that the legislation upon which this ability to make this division is based is Mike Yarros's legislation, which only allows the school district to do this if there is an integration plan, and that is going to be sorely, sorely soiled by this particular plan that the school district has. I will point out that right now we are being sold snake oil in our school district as the very unpopular school board attempts to explain away why they're doing what they're doing. The board chairman, Ms. Nelson, has been explaining to people why this plan will only cost them about $100 million when even in the forms they sent down to the state's Department of Education for review and comment quickly spell out that this is a $437 million plan. The superintendent has repeatedly said that Johnson Controls, the primary builder of this, will only receive 2% earnings on the overall contract when the contract itself has a great many other avenues and percentages far in excess of that. So we are not being given a very credible defense for the red plan. I would conclude by saying this. This school board at any point could have gone to the voters and asked them to make the decision. I myself, a bleeding heart pro-school person, might have voted for it. I think the red plan might have voted. But they knew, because of Mike's Law and a couple of others, that they could do this without a vote. And as a result of not trusting the voters, the feeling is now mutual. Our voters no longer trust the school board, and we are hoping that you, in the legislature, will support Representative Yaws and restore the voting power of the people in Duluth. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Welty. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Gary Glass. You may have seen me in the previous decade with Willard Bugger down here working on environmental projects. I'm a research scientist by profession. I am a reluctant candidate to the school board when last July the candidate who was to renew indicated he would not, and that was one of the individuals who was disappointed and was voted against having this plan put before the public. So in order to pursue his seat and to further the choice to have the public have a choice, this race was the only one that entailed all 40 precincts within Duluth. And so the election came up last November, and I would have bet you $1 million 10 years ago that I would never stand for an election. But I now have a much greater appreciation of the work that goes into that type of an activity. And we, of course, produced a card for our election. Of the 25,664 people who voted, 15,491 voted for myself. That's 93% of the 40 precincts. And the strange thing was that I looked at the distribution of the three precincts that didn't vote for the right to vote. One of them, I was in a minority of one, another by two votes, and the third one by five votes. So the vote was so close, even in the precincts, that I didn't achieve a majority, and it was very clear that the people who at the time were wanting to vote, that's the single major effort. Even the folks that wanted the red plan, many of those indicated they wanted the right to vote on it. But as it turns out, many of the people who wanted to vote no. They didn't like the red plan. They didn't like the cost. They didn't like the radical nature of the plan in closing buildings, that some of which are fairly new buildings. They didn't like the idea of taking 7 of the 19 buildings, closing them, and selling them for a third of their value. That goes against all of the things that they have put their hard-earned money into the school system in Duluth. And I get a one-page of my summary statement here that indicates why this plan was not only radical but regressive and ruinous. As people have mentioned, the city of Duluth is not a highly rich community, and to add a burden to the population up to $10,000 debt per household is an extreme amount. That is a lot of money over a 20-year period, and that's the time period where this plan would go forward. And so, like any proposal, people fought, and they thought they had the right to vote. And when they learned that they did not and would not be voting on this, they became very angry. And so I am here out of a state of obligation to the voters to represent them and tell you that we want the law changed back to where they could vote, and they could vote on the important parts of the school board, the school finances. And so even if you would like to set a cap on an upper limit, we would certainly encourage you to allow the voters to weigh in on whether school boards are doing what they will support. And that's within the policy of the school board that I currently serve on. We have to have a program that the community will support, that has the ability to support. And so there's no other way to do that than to let them vote. And so we implore you to, in fact, adopt the Giles change and go back to allowing the public to vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Glass. And Rep. Sepiaros, what I'd like to do is finish all the public testimony before we start giving one side or the other an unfair advantage by having a dialogue back and forth with the committee, and then members can ask anyone to return to the table.
Okay.
So if there's anyone else who would like to testify for or against Rep. Sepiaros' bill, we'd invite you to join us at the table. So thank you both, and you may be back up here for questions. So, anyone else? Please, yes, welcome. Awesome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak today. My name is Nancy Nielsen, and I'm the chair of the Duluth School Board. I couldn't have said it better than Representative Tom Huntley when he told the Duluth News Tribune, quote, "I moved to Duluth in 1973, and for 35 years I have heard people talking about getting a comprehensive school plan, and now there finally is one. I think we ought to stick with it." He added, "It's not the state's place to intervene," unquote. Closing schools is an emotional and divisive issue, as many of you are probably aware. It's not an easy thing to do, and school districts across the state wrestle with it in the face of a declining school-age population. Duluth is no different. In 2003, I chaired the committee working to pass an operating levy. I talked to hundreds of people in churches and neighborhood centers, at sporting events and community group meetings. The last attempt at an operating levy had failed, and people were not afraid to tell me why. Our student population had decreased significantly, but we hadn't closed enough schools to match the decline. We were wasting money on too many buildings, and those we had were outdated and falling apart. Numerous attempts to close schools and develop a long-range facilities plan had failed miserably, and the instability was hurting our district. I told people that if they supported the operating levy, we would use the time wisely and develop a long-range facilities plan. The levy passed, and we had 5 years to get a plan created. In 2005, I ran for the school board. I made it clear that if elected, I would work hard on developing a well-researched facilities plan with ample input from the community. Once elected, I went straight to Superintendent Dixon and said, "We have 3 years left to get a plan developed, and if we don't, we won't stand a chance of getting the next operating levy passed." A citizens advisory group was formed with broad representation from across the district. We had senior citizens and young people, labor and management, parents and non-parents, those representing low-income and ethnic communities, among others. They told us we had to do it right this time. We had to actively involve the community and do the necessary in-depth research. Most importantly, we had to follow through. Time and again, they'd seen citizens devote time and effort to the creation of a plan, only to see it fall by the wayside when school board members caved under the pressure to change their decision. I was a liaison to this committee and observed this operation. They came in with a blank slate, put their opinions aside, and listened and learned and let the data and the community point the way. They had over 120 meetings with organizations ranging from senior citizens to Kiwanis, Lions Clubs, Rotaries, Duluth American Indian Commission, Affordable Housing Coalition, and many, many others. They hosted 12 community-wide meetings. They posted information on the internet and encouraged people to share their thoughts. They worked with the local media, resulting in over 220 stories in radio, television, newspaper, internet, and other communication venues. They shared each piece of data as it was developed. A demographic study with enrollment projections, the property valuations, the building repairs that were needed, the financing options, the educational adequacy of our buildings, and more. After 16 months of data collection and dissemination, countless discussions with citizens, and a scientific survey by Decision Resources telling us that 70% supported the plan, the Citizens Committee unanimously endorsed what is called the Red Plan, with a modification to the boundary line that was spoken about earlier. So it is not going to be where it was previously discussed. They also unanimously supported implementing the plan without a referendum. Almost a year ago, our board approved the Red Plan as our long-range facilities plan. It was sent to the Minnesota Department of Education for approval. They did a detailed analysis of every aspect of the plan and approved it. 3 months ago, we bonded for a portion of the plan. This week, we approved the purchase of 15 homes for the project and have letters from property owners stating how pleased they were with the process. We've hired architects and bids will be let next week. Taxpayers saw the cost of their 2008 on their 2008 property tax statement and started to pay for it. The plan is endorsed and supported by labor, the Chamber of Commerce, the Teachers Union, the trades, and many more. Stopping this plan would be devastating for our community. This plan has been endorsed by labor, the Chamber of Commerce, the Teachers Union, the trades. Oh, I said that, sorry. This has been very difficult for the school board members, but we have strong board members that are committed to seeing this through to completion. If we don't proceed with this plan, I can't imagine how we'll ever get another plan created and passed, let alone find support for another operating levy. We've done our homework. We followed an open and inclusive process. There is hope in the Duluth community that we will finally, after 35 years of attempts, be able to upgrade our schools that are falling apart. Please don't make the over 10,000 hours of citizens and school districts' work be in vain again. This will put many people to work in our area, building something the entire city can be proud of. Every child will go to school in a building that is either upgraded or new, all for a very reasonable price to the taxpayers of our district. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nielsen. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the Tax Committee, Representative Yarrow. My name is Keith Dixon. I'm superintendent of schools in Duluth, and I've been there. This is completing my third year. As you can hear from Nancy, this has really been a challenging issue for this community for decades upon decades upon decades. And fundamentally, if you think about it, we have gone from over 22,000 students to just under 10,000 students today. And the fundamental piece to it is simply part of it is around the number of schools that we have. We simply have more schools than we need at the high school level, the middle school level, and the elementary level. And kingpin to that, as you might imagine, is then really the high school piece to this plan. Because as we all know, high schools have pomps and circumstances and traditions and graduates and class reunions, and all of these three high schools have deep, rich traditions within our community. At the same time, as we look at this and we've done our analysis, as Nancy said, this is just an example, the compilation of all the meetings and time that this community group spent going through the community and working on this. In fact, as one of our senior citizens said on our committee, you'd have to be under a rock not to know what's going on in Duluth relative to this plan. In other words, we didn't unveil a plan. We worked with the community together to build consensus around a plan the majority of people could support. We brought them along with us on this most important journey. The challenge has been because we have not been able to make such a difficult decision. Yes, we have done some infrastructure improvements, but they simply have not been enough. In part because we didn't know where to invest. We didn't know which schools we were going to keep. We didn't know which schools we were going to close. When we did our assessment, we found that we had over $200 million of deferred maintenance. And those assessments were done by professionals of our community, from plumbers to electricians to builders, not by us, but by our own people assessing our buildings. We found that 60% of our buildings do not meet present code relative to building standards. One of our buildings we use today still isn't even handicap accessible, to give you an idea. This is a school that opened in the early 1900s, I believe 1906. That's how old these buildings are in Duluth. In fact, on average, they're 53 years old. We consider a school that's almost 20 years old as one of our newest schools. So that gives you a sense about where these schools are. When I think about this from a student-teacher educational perspective, an adequacy perspective, these buildings, as they're presently configured, severely limit our ability to offer high-quality programs and high-quality best practice instructional practices today. These classrooms, if you would see them and come to our district, are small. I can remember a young man, we had students on our work with us as well during our focus group, in a wheelchair said, I have to sit on the side because I cannot get down the aisles to sit anywhere else because the classrooms are so small and so crowded. We're talking about classrooms of 500-600 square feet, where the base standards are at least 1,000. So we have tremendously small classrooms. We have science labs that frankly are an embarrassment to our community. If I took you into them, I would have to tell you they are science labs because you couldn't tell by walking into the room. And the building layouts and systems that we have today in terms of safety and security, as you know, if you can imagine buildings built in the turn of the century that we're using today, simply are not constructed in such a way in terms of physical layout for security. You know, some of our schools, you have to walk clear into the middle of the school even to find the office. So people can come into our buildings sort of from anywhere within the system. Our HVAC systems, our windows, we've had students testify relative to wind blowing in. We've had students testify actually snow in the classrooms. Those are the kinds of issues we've been dealing with in Duluth. When you look at this project, certainly we care about taxes. We care about impact on our community. We must do that. And so what I want to talk about is this. Yes, this is a plan for $293 million. We also showed our community the interest. And the reason for that is all along we shared all information, including our document we sent to the state for a review and comment. And so this is based on $293 million. And in essence, to do that, there is a $125 million increase on the tax rolls in Duluth. The remaining amount is really funded this way, by having the courage to close down schools, by selling property, and by taking what's already existing in our buildings that we're spending money on every day, inefficiencies, and upgrading these schools, and using the inefficiencies in our buildings now already in our budget simply to finance the difference. I would submit to you that's a very wise investment. The other thing I would just simply point to one more graph for you to see is, how do we compare? How do we compare? Well, these are just the outstate districts of about $9,000 or more. 9,000 citizens or more. It's hard to keep dollars and people straight, okay? And if you look at this for a moment, just at that bottom graph, if you just look there for a moment, these are the outstate districts. We're not even talking about trying to compare to the districts in the Twin Cities or the suburbs. If you look at where we are in terms of percent of local levy on our homes in Duluth and our properties, as you can see there, what the yellow bar shows right now, before our long-range facility plan, where we were 34th out of 35th. And by the way, this also includes a local operating levy of $365 per pupil. So if you now look at Duluth after our long-range facility plan and what's presently on the tax rolls, you can see we've moved from about 34th to 27th. This this point is important to me because I know you're the tax committee. We are trying to do this in an effective, efficient way, in a responsible way, and yet keep our taxes reasonable. In short, because we haven't invested in our buildings for so long, significantly, we have had low taxes in Duluth relative to this issue for a long period of time. And so this does feel like a jump. In the time that we have had as a statute in Minnesota, the ability to use alternative facility bonding and lease purchase authority we believe under the statutes, and so does the department, verify that we're using correctly. Duluth has only used those two statutes once for alternative facility bonding, the first year it became law, and we've only used lease purchase authority one time. If, in fact, we had been using those statutes appropriately over a long period of time, and these decisions would have been made years ago, then we wouldn't be sitting here today. So, I think to say to you would be this in closing. First of all, in addition here today, along with us, we do have representatives from our citizens group that's here, parents, if you need to speak with them, that were part of this committee. Certainly we have financial people here that can help with the detail if you so desire. I would also like to acknowledge Grace Schwab here from MSBA. I'd like to also acknowledge that Tom Melcher is here from the Department of Education, who worked with us all the way along on our plan in terms of understanding what we were doing in our financial mechanism. And I look forward to answering any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Dixon. Okay, so are there further people who'd like to testify? I do believe we have some. I don't know if Representative Murphy wants to talk to us or some thoughts on that, or if there are other folks. We kind of want to get the whole issue out here in front of us. You know, I think it might be helpful for folks to focus on the levy piece here. I know there's a lot of issues swirling around in this big. This is a big issue. Representative Murphy, did you want to join us, or you're reluctant as well? Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I come before you not so much talk about the red plan, but just to give a different perspective on this. And I'd like to start by reminding you that in my legislative district, there are five different school districts. Duluth is one of them. I'd also like to remind you that I'm chair of the Education Finance Committee. And the other authors on the committee, on the bill, are Representative Greiling, Representative Rutavina, and Representative Mariani, who are also chairs of the Education Committee. And when Representative Yaros brought the bill to us, after much thought, and asked us to sign it, I signed, and I think the others did too, because we really respect and like Mike Yarrow. But also because what brought Representative Yarrow to the decision that the dialogue should be made, at least in part, in St. Paul, was something that affected all of us. It's not just about Duluth. But the issues are so many, like you just said, in this development of the comprehensive plan, which they have done a wonderful job, as the chair of the school board has told you, about inclusiveness and long-range planning and getting data and having experts in for the student enrollment plans and all that, all the things that are in their red plan and in their data that led to the red plan. keep in mind there wasn't, the red plan didn't, it didn't start out with the red plan. There was a white plan, there was a blue plan, and the red plan happened to win. Now on the outskirts there's a green plan, but I'm not getting into that. I think the law that they use to not have a referendum is the law that is creating the discussion. It takes me 45 minutes to an hour longer to get groceries if I go to Super One or Cub in Duluth. It takes me at least 40 minutes at Barnes & Noble if I run in for a book. 40 minutes longer than I used to get, because people are abuzz all over the city and in the outskirts. And they are in a quandary, because so many of them thought that something this big couldn't be done without their final approval. Duluth does not have a history. The Duluth School District does not have a history of defeating bond issues. Their committees that have been led over the years for bond issues have been successful for the most part. The levy referendums, operating levy referendums, do not have a history of big failures. People are used to voting for important issues, and education in Duluth is an important issue. And the public schools in Duluth are important, and the children that are educated there are important. I remind you, I spent 33 years working in the Duluth Public Schools. It was my life, and it still is. And I'm asking, is this setting an example for others? Should we think about removing the levy, or removing the vote, if a school district wants to make capital investments, or if a school district wants to have a bond issue to build a new building? Those people that make this decision, the school board with the community people that they include, are elected people. And so maybe all over the state, the responsibility should go to the school district. And we should seriously consider that. Look at how many school districts come before us for additional help because their issue failed in an election. In the bonding discussion, we had Wells Health and Betterment safety, school safety issue. And how many times have they defeated the bond issue? And yet their kids are still going to that school. The exceptions that are contained in the lease purchase law were for Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, areas of those school districts that had integration segregation problems. Duluth is using it for the total school district. Is that in keeping with the law? The integration for segregation funding, in the day that Representative Yaros brought his bill, whether we should continue with the compensatory aid and the integration segregation money, integration money, failed on a 10-10 vote in K-12. The next week or the next day, whenever it happened after that, the meeting in my committee, again, that failed in my committee. So there's almost a 50% balance of the education people that think that our school districts should get the same kind of assistance, not just Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, or at least expand that kind of assistance to other school districts that have like problems. Talking to people in house research, there are like school districts to Duluth. And Rochester, Osseo, Wilmer are examples. As a result of the Department of Education monitoring what was going on with the plan, while the plan was being developed, Commissioner Siegman said to me, well, we can't stop it, but we have done some things that we went back to them and said they had to develop their plan so there were bigger areas for property that surrounded the various schools that were being redone so that there would be more land available. What has happened with that means that more houses are having to be bought up and eminent domain may have to be used. How fair is that to people that invested their time and energy into the plan, never dreaming that maybe their house would be going? I believe, I might be wrong, but I think there's a total of 82 houses that are going to have to be displaced. That means 82 families, 82 people. I believe there are some many willing sellers, but I'm not sure about the last 26. Attendance areas, school closings, school sizes, all these issues, eminent domain, integration money, all these things are part of this. And they're all part of issues that we have to settle in education committee. It's not just about Duluth. It raises the same questions for all of us to make decisions on. And they're huge, huge problems. And it all goes back to, should we have had a vote?
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Are there other testifiers? Anybody else would like to join us? Do you want to join us, Senator Solon?
Yes. I have a question. Sorry, I got here late.
Well, Representative Joe, we asked everybody to hold their questions until we finish with the public testimony.
Right.
And then we'll be able to ask anybody we want. So we want to ask Senator Solon to join us if we can.
Graciously, it's not very often that a member of one body gets a chance to address them.
Yeah.
A committee of another body.
Welcome.
Senator Yvonne Kretner-Solin. I represent the 7th District in Duluth, which is most of Duluth except for 4 precincts in the northern portion of the city. And actually, I did not come here prepared to make comments, but I have to say that I am I'm deeply distressed, and I feel the pain of a city that is terribly divided about an issue that really could be pulling people together. But Duluth also has a history of being a very, very involved, having a very, very involved population of residents, and people who feel very, very passionately about their city, their school, their lake, and everything that goes on in our community. And they speak out loudly and want to be heard. Having said that, I think that the district has bent over backwards to involve people and to gain their not only their support but their input as they've been moving forward to develop a plan. It's been developed over 2 years. They've had over 125 public meetings, in addition to a number of other, and those were meetings in which the community was involved and invited to participate, but also a number of other meetings in which they made public appearances at large service clubs and community groups throughout the past couple of years. Dr. Dixon has already pointed out that we have a low levy for a district of our size compared to other communities. Duluth is an old city. Our buildings are old. They need a lot of upkeep. And a lot of Duluth has been improving its image. It has been renovating itself since the mid-70s or the early 80s. But the school district, the buildings themselves, we have excellent teachers, we have an excellent dedicated staff, and we have parents who are very involved in the school system. But the buildings themselves are almost what I would call decrepit, and they are embarrassing when people move into the community, when people think about relocating to our community, when they start questioning about where their children are going to go to school and what type of education they're going to receive. It makes it very difficult to attract businesses to our community and professionals to our community. So I think that we're at a point where a huge investment has been made. I know that there is an outcry from a number of people, but I think that it is the minority when you look at the number of people that actually support the plan. I think there are 41 homes that are being taken by condemnation. 15 of them have had very successful resolution. There are contracts in hand. They've written letters stating they've been very pleased with the process. Everybody enters into the condemnation process, of course, with some anxiety because of the loss of their homes and wondering what will happen in the future. But the school district has been very, very generous in offering beyond the 90 days normally offered by condemnation. They've offered a full year, and they have realtors that are working with the people to help them relocate. They are giving them 30 days to make the actual move. They are giving them relocation expenses, and people that have settled have been satisfied with the outcomes that they've received. And they're working on the rest of them. I know that there are still people that are anxious, but I believe that they too will be able to find satisfaction as they move along in the process. I think the thing that's most important is that we bring this to closure, that we move forward rather than disrupt this process at this time, because that will just continue to pull our community apart and to continue to give people up in an uproar about it and very, very concerned about it. I think it's time to move forward to help people make the adjustments and to allow our community to heal and to be very, very pleased. I believe they will be very, very pleased as they see the progress is made, as the plan is implemented, and as the development occurs. I think the other thing is that people are misinformed or apprehensive about the cost of this project. And actually, my understanding is it's only $125 million is being placed on the property taxes. That has already been assessed. It was assessed when people received their property tax statements a couple weeks ago. They know what the cost will be. Somehow the fear is that same type of assessment is going to be added again next year and then sometime later in the future. That is not true. What people are being assessed, that is the top limit of what their property taxes are going to be raised. It is a chunk, but I think it's something that most people are willing to make that investment in. It's not just the homeowners that are paying, the businesses that are paying. I think the other important thing to say is that the Central Labor Body has endorsed the plan. The Chamber of Commerce has endorsed the plan. So there has been a lot of support for this project in the community, even though there are some people that are disgruntled. So I thank you for the opportunity to address you, and I'd be glad to stand for questions also.
Thank you, Senator Solon. Appreciate you being here tonight. Is there anyone else from the public? Okay, if not, we have Representative Earhart and Dill. Representative Earhart, he left. No, he's here. I thought you were over there. Representative Earhart.
I'm over there if you like.
No, I saw you over there. Okay, Representative Earhart.
I'm curious, Madam Chair, is any of this in the Taconite Distribution District? Any of this?
I wish this were.
Okay.
But real quiet.
Well,
we're segregated.
Okay. Madam Chair, are Johnson Controls the ones that are going to build this thing and then you're going to lease it back from them? Is that what this is?
But some of it is levy and others is lease purchase,
yeah,
as I understand it.
Okay.
Now,
do other school districts have a, Madam Chair, I don't know who would answer this, other schools that have a lease, are they leasing in the magnitude that we're talking about here, or larger or smaller, or...
Representative Yarrow's answers, I actually sent Jim Strom a note to join us at the table, but and he said he would, but he's gone. So if anyone knows where he went, if you could get him back, because now Representative Earhart is asking a question that would be great for Jim Strom to see here.
Madam Chair.
I don't see. Okay, but Representative Yarrow is the author. Well, answer. If there's anyone else who'd like to come and answer the difference in the levy.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I understand that $45 million is the largest I think St. Paul had. I don't think anybody has done as much here.
Well,
Representative Earhart. Does that mean that at the end of some lease period that Johnson Controls retains the properties then, or do you, how does that work?
I'd rather have nonpartisan research answer the questions, okay? So, I mean, I think that's, I appreciate that people are all jumping up, but this, you know, here's the problem, members. We just got to think about this for a second. This is really mostly an education bill. I mean, the levy component and the public finance component is rightly part of the tax, but what happened is this bill was introduced after Representative Greiling's committee was done. So I think normally we'd have them sort of hashing out the boundary, as Representative Murphy stated, the boundaries and all these bucket of issues. The public finance part, the can you take a vote with, can you do a levy without a vote? Normally there's a voter-approved levies, but there's been a kind of a history as to who had these exceptions and why, some of it related to segregation dollars. And really, Mr. Strom or another nonpartisan, non-lobbyist person, Mr. Melcher is here. That would be helpful. He is. Okay, so if we could first get kind of no one with the dog in the fight to answer the straight-up question, I think that's just helpful. It's not to be against Duluth or St. Paul or anyone else who cares about this, but we just you know, we're not the education committee. So, Mr. Meltzer, it'd be helpful if you could just kind of frame up this bucket of issues for Representative Earhart and for all of us.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Tom Meltzer. I'm the Program Finance Director at the Department of Education. For the most part, school districts are required to have a majority vote on any school construction project. There have been a few exceptions in law over the years, and this is one that goes back, I think, around 20 years. That was originally put in law for Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. That allowed them to do a lease purchase without voter approval. And I know this has been used by St. Paul. They've built some facilities using this as well, and I believe Minneapolis has as well. I don't have all of the history with me in terms of the history of this, but I know that it has been used in the past. I don't think that we have seen a project anything close to this magnitude in the past, and I think that's because the Duluth District has a large number of projects here that are involving schools across the entire district. So this is one of the largest, if not the largest, school construction project all in one bundle that we've seen at this size. This law was amended back in the late 90s when the school district desegregation rules were changed. Originally, it applied only to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. And the law as originally written, while it identified Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth as districts that had a desegregation plan, it did not require the use of the levy to be specifically for projects linked to the desegregation plan. When the law was amended in the late 90s, when additional districts were added in terms of requirements for desegregation plans, for those new districts that were added, there were two additional requirements put in place. For other school districts, such as Rochester and a number of others, Wilmer, there are a number across the state now, that are considered racially isolated because they have a concentration of students of color that is more than 20% of their neighbors, the requirement is that in order to be receiving this levy without voter approval, the district has to demonstrate that the construction project is necessary to implement their desegregation plan. That does not apply to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. It applies to these other districts that have been added, such as Rochester, for example. And Rochester is the only one that I'm familiar with that has used this since that took place. In addition to the core cities, there's also a provision that allows lease purchase for school districts, primarily suburban school districts, that are cooperating with core cities to build joint facilities for desegregation purposes. And for those school districts, the levy authority is limited to those joint facilities, such as a WEMEP, the West Metro area, or there's an EMID in the East Metro area where they could build facilities for desegregation programs, magnet schools that are inter-district with this levy authority. So that is kind of the history of this program, Madam Chair.
So Representative Earhart, following up on that, so that's sort of the history on why do they get the exemption of the referendum on what normally would be voter approved and sort of how this is currently, how the law is currently being read in Duluth. Representative
okay.
Earhart.
Okay, then so the only else I was asking was, is there an end to the lease, and then what happens to the property, or does the lease go on forever?
Mr. Meltzer?
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, this is a lease purchase agreement, so
okay.
it would be ultimately going into the school district.
Okay. Representative Earhart, further?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have Bill Lanning forward. Representative Bill.
Well, for right now, pass, because Mr. Strom was busy doing an amendment for the bill for me.
Okay, well, we're not going to vote on the bill today. Okay, so.
But we would take amendments
sure.
to the bill, correct?
If you'd like to. I mean, I think Representative Yaros can explain further his thoughts on kind of how we proceed from here, because I think he's trying to get this issue before us again. The bill was introduced after both the House Education Committee had an opportunity to hear it and the Senate Tax Committee. This is sort of the last, you know, spot. If it's moving at all, this is kind of where it's got to move, and it may not be. Representative
Madam
Holder.
Chair.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Just to
your point there.
Yeah.
I just have a question on timing.
Yep.
It seems like this process has been going on for some time, this red plan or whatever it is, and this has been
this isn't an overnight deal. How is it that this has come to this committee at this late date and not a year ago, or why hasn't this come forward? I mean, this has been in play for a long time, it looks to me. So I'd just like to move on.
I'll let Representative Yarles why he, you know, tell us when, why he introduced it when he did. But I'll tell you, members, I've had people ask me not to hear this bill. So I just want to be very clear that Representative Yarles is a long-standing and esteemed member of the Tax Committee. And my policy has been what former taxpayers have been. If you are a member of this committee and you ask for a hearing, no matter what side of the aisle you sit on, you get one. So Representative Yarles asked me for a hearing, and that's why we're here now. Representative Yarles.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, the school board voted on this last June after we were done with the session. And I couldn't believe, and I try to do other things, hopefully not to have to wash our laundry here. This bill does not, this issue does not have anything to do with educational policy. It's a building and tax, it's a tax bill. I'm not changing any educational policy, so I don't think it has anything to do with the Education Committee. I waited to see how many people are going to support. I didn't want to introduce it all by myself. Majority of the Duluth Legislative Delegation is supporting the bill, and that's when I made the move.
Okay. So, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was start of a line of questioning I wanted to raise. Maybe if the chair of the school board and superintendent could give us some more specifics in terms of the timeline here, when this financing plan was decided and when it was publicly announced.
Superintendent Dixon.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, ultimately, from the very beginning, we talked about in all these committees from the very beginning and talking through this. As you know, if you don't discuss the financial piece, you have no plan. And so early on in the process, we were laying out options, as you're hearing. There was more than one option presented to the community, and we got all our information. At that time, in the finance, in the plan, the financing options, the total dollars, and what was estimated to be per month on a $125,000 home, was given to the public early on in the process. So we continued that process of when we were working with the community, doing our surveying, exactly what the dollar figure would be estimated in the plan. We actually said $10 to $12. It's $9.20 per month on $125,000. So ultimately, and then we went through the review and comment cycle. Our plan was approved and asked to move forward with the Department of Education in June. We went through the review and comment cycle then, which took us most of the summer into this early past fall, receiving a letter then from Commissioner Segrin to move forward and authorizing a certain limit for both alternative facility bonds and lease levy.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So essentially, this financing plan, the lease purchase, was decided last summer, early fall, publicly announced at that time.
That is correct. And over a year ago, in fact, from the very beginning, the dollars it would be were actually estimated and shown in the plan all the way along.
Madam Chair, I, as a member of this committee for a long time, I appreciate the way this committee has, and the chairs of this committee have paid respect to those of us who are members, if we wanted something heard, to have it heard. But Madam Chair, I have a problem with something that was publicly decided and announced so long ago, now coming before us as a tax committee here at this late date. This just seems to be out of sync to me. If this issue obviously is very important to a lot of people on both sides of it, we should have been dealing with this issue a long time ago, not here at the 11th hour of our session. With all due respect, Representative Yarles, I think this is way too late in the process to be raising these issues.
Madam Chair, this is House File 4127. We're hearing bills that were almost 4,000. I mean, 4180 something, or, you know, much, you know, there, we've, you know, so I mean, it's not a deadline. We're only dealing with property tax. This is not educational policy. It's a building and property tax issue.
Madam Chair, the you know, this, to be fair to schools all over the state, and even though this affects, is directed only at Duluth, I mean, we're talking about a significant education policy here that has not been routed through an education policy committee. As a tax committee, I think we should want to know what education policy thinks about this. Yes, because the levy provision is in here, it needs to come to the tax committee, but in my view, this should have been through education policy committees before it came here. And that's another reason why I just feel this is too late for us to be weighing in on something that's so far along the road.
To that point with Representative Dill.
I just would want to make sure, having served on this committee for a while, that we don't have a deadline in this committee.
We do not have a deadline in the tax committee. That's why we're still here at night, final few weeks of session.
Madam Chair, I hear Representative Lanning's argument about this. I mean, I heard what he said, but I didn't think there was a deadline.
You know, and members, it is good to recall that the tax committee is not for the week. I mean, for those who want a quick, short, and be done in a few weeks, this is not the committee to be on. There is no deadline. There are no germaneness rules. Everything is relevant, finally, in the end. And so there's a lot of reasons that the tax committee operates. They're a little different than everyone else. Revenue estimates instead of fiscal notes, but Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I of course, realize there's no deadline. In reality, and we can still consider this, and you paid that respect to Representative Yarrow's bill, but we're also talking about a school district that is on a road. They've been on a road for months, and this is awfully late in the game for the legislature to weigh in saying, oh, by the way, you're not on the right road. You shouldn't be doing this.
Okay, thank you for that, Representative Fulberg.
A couple of things. I think just a little bit of history, and maybe I'm mistaken, but Smelter, I think in a couple of incidences, like you had the East and the West integration levies that's in the metropolitan area here, I think there was also some state bonding money put into those particular projects. And I just want that for the record.
Mr. Smelter. And there, you know, Representative Fulberg, and this is this intersection with education and taxes, you know, there's the alternative facilities levy for a whole bunch of big school districts. I'm one of them. That we don't have to take that to a vote, and it's if you have a lot of square footage of buildings, you qualify for that.
Yeah.
And so there's all kinds of interesting levies that people often aren't aware of. But Mr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Silberg, you are correct. There was state bonding money involved in that. I was just going through the law and identifying the various pieces, and this law would allow the participants in a inter-district desegregation plan to, if they had another project that wasn't funded with state bonding money, to use this lease purchase levy for that purpose as well.
Thank you, Representative Fulberg.
I'm sure, I don't know if the others have done that. I know, if I recall right, I think the state has put $10 million in each of the projects that I recall. I don't remember that for sure, but the state did a desegregation plan on the state level as well, in this area. But Madam Chair, what I think is, and I don't have a document right here, what disturbs me a little bit is in testimony that this isn't eliminating segregation or talking about the integration plan. And I think that's kind of where Representative Murphy was kind of concerned as well. I mean, the law that was passed was specifically for, as I understand it, to deal with segregation and integration purposes. And it seems to me, even though the education department says we can't stop it, it seems to me that it's a little bit of a flaunting of the law. And I guess maybe if somebody from the Dr. David Dixon or somebody would answer my question, and that is, How does this relate to integration in the segregation plans that have been adopted by the school district?
Mr. Dr. Dixon.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think I'd say two or three things. First of all, it's my understanding that fundamentally that is used to help quantify which school districts have this authority and which ones do not. However, I would also say this, that first of all, we do have an integration plan in Duluth. We presently have magnet schools in Duluth as part of our plan. When we put up this plan that you see in front of us, the long-range facility plan we're talking about here, our DSEG integration committee was a part of that discussion all the way from the beginning. Ultimately, when we get done with this plan, our goal is to actually help redistribute our students more equitably, both in terms of socioeconomic makeup and our students of color. And we will continue to modify our integration plan that we have, not only to meet the outcomes of this plan, but to continue to think about how we help those students all achieve at high levels. So it's not, in a way, it's not an either or. That is, in fact, what's going on as we speak.
Okay, thank you for that. That's unfolded.
Just a follow-up. I don't know if Dr. Dixon really answered the question or just kind of stretched the answer somewhat. My question is, this particular law that was used was specifically to address integration and segregation concerns. And this may help address it, but I think it's just addressing more than that. And it's addressing old buildings, it's addressing closing buildings, and all the other things that go with it. So I guess my question is, how are we stretching the law a little bit that we're using, or are we following the letter of the law?
Madam,
welcome to the committee. Can you give us your name for the record?
I'm sorry, Ron Silberg with the Duluth School District.
Welcome.
He's an SOLB, I'm just an SOB.
We heard a lot about that last night, because it wasn't about you. It was another member of the committee.
But a little institutional history, because I've been here too long. As you may remember, a few years ago, it was kind of a custom of legislators and lobbyists to try to get some legislation passed that doesn't necessarily identify a school district or a city or a town by name, but by description. And I think, and this wasn't our legislation to begin with, but I think that the intent was to provide some additional help to the cities of the first class with very old buildings, with very great building needs, some additional help by identifying them as districts with segregation plans, because we were the only three districts at the time that did. Now, there was also some justification for that, because being able to upgrade our facilities certainly made it more beneficial for our students, both our students of color and the rest of the population. But frankly, it was not. It was put in to identify the school districts rather than to identify a particular use for the plan. And I think the fact that over the years, when this has been amended, the fact that it was never amended to affect Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth and their use of the revenue, I think that's an indication that was taken into account.
Well, Madam Chair, just a statement that I made, that maybe it wasn't amended because it was never perceived to be misused as well.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Silberg, but the only time we did use it was to build a secondary vocational center.
Thank you. That's Sanjel. Are you ready?
Well, I did.
Were there further questions? I think Representative Jill would like to do an amendment. I want to remind folks we're not going to vote on this bill tonight, and who are here from the audience. We don't do that in taxes either. That's also another way we're unique. We lay everything over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and your fate is tied to every other tax provision in the state of Minnesota. So we won't vote on the actual bill. Members can offer amendments, and Representative Bill would like to do that. But we do have Representative Morgan and Representative Thiessen's bills here yet tonight, too, so we'd like to get to those. Representative Jill? Okay, Representative Jill is going to move the 841-2783 amendment. They're being passed out now. You know, I'm sure Representative Murphy and Senator Solins, if people, if there's some extras, would like to take a look at the amendment. If the pages can bring one to them, if we have a few. Okay, they're going to go get a few more. And we're going to ask Margaret. Maybe she has one. Representative Dill, hang on just a second. Okay, well, we'll just let you go ahead. I do want Representative Murphy to be able to see the amendment we're on, and I think we just don't have enough copies. And Senator Solins, just to understand what we're looking at. Representative Dill.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, you moved the A3?
Yes.
Okay.
You moved the A3, by the way. Out of my mouth.
I heard it come out of your mouth, so I thought you were doing it. All right.
You did it.
So, Madam Chair, while we're here tonight and we're discussing voting and not voting, the amendment, what this does is, you know, my school district that I represent, one of my school districts that I represent, one of the school districts I represent, is the largest in the entire state. It has 7 campuses in the district, and it has 2,000 students. And it encompasses a massive amount of geographic area. And we were unable, we have always been unable, we have not been able to pass any excess levy referendums. And the latest one has been a $500 per pupil a levy, which would amount to $1 million for that school district. It'd be what, 1/293rd of what Duluth wants to do on their building project. And so what this does, Madam Chair, is allows the school district by resolution or a vote, either one, if you look on line 1.16 and 1.17, to adopt a excess levy operating referendum, and that further they would be subject to the property that is classified as seasonal recreational, and it would shift the state general tax from the presently on place on seasonal rec and the commercial property, it would shift it over to the commercial property. And I don't know the number, maybe Mr. Michaels could tell us what that number is. I think it's around $30 million, as I recall. My senator is the tax chair, and so this kind of emulates the provision that he has, I think, in his tax bill, that I'm sure that the chair is just excited to embrace. But that's what it does, members. We can't pass, not only can't we build a school because we can't pass referendums, but we can't even operate them. I mean, my wife, the school now, every class in the, well, I'll just tell you, in our Orr school, which is my home community, in 1980 we had 800 students in 12 grades. We now have 196. Every class is combined. Kindergarten's only every other day, every other week. I think I got that one right. Oh, every week, every other day. Sorry. Duluth wants to build a new school, and I understand why, but, I mean, we can't even keep the doors open on the ones we've got. So that's the reason, that's the purpose of the amendment, and I think Representative Moe had an amendment similar to this on the House floor that he had as well. And so that's what the amendment does. It lets us, now Representative Rucavina won't like this wouldn't like this amendment because he has a problem too. Well, he has a lot of problems, but he has, one problem is that his mines don't pay on operating levy referendums either because they pay a different kind of a tax. So I didn't make that accommodation in here, but this takes the seasonal rec and puts it back on the thing. I can see that the chair is voting yes right now. I can see her head going like this.
And Representative Dale, thanks for that. We want to hear what Representative Yaros feels about the amendment, but I'll just, you know, Representative Dale's right. I oppose the amendment. I think this is a major, significant tax change going on right now, and I think we're going to need a long, full discussion if we're ready to embrace both Representative Moe's legislation, Representative Ward's legislation, and Senator Bach's legislation. Would have dramatic impacts across the state if we were to put cabins back on the levy, as I understand it, and we would then have no votes on any both capital and operating levies.
So, Madam Chair, that wouldn't be quite right.
Okay.
Because the way the bill is drafted, it says resolution or by the voters. Look on line 1.17. So you can go either way. I mean, you know, a district that was fearing for their life that they would be thrown out of, as the school board members would probably want to take a vote. Those who are desperate, like in 2142 in Lake County and in Cook County, they're probably thinking, I'll be willing to go to the wolves in order to save our school. That's the reason it was drafted that way.
Okay. Representative Yarros.
I don't know. I haven't seen this before, and it seems like a large thing that I can't understand.
Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, and as Madam Chair, as Representative Bill knows, we've had this before the Property Tax Committee, and just by principle, I'm strongly opposed, because what you're doing is you're just relying more and more on the property taxes when you're letting the state off the hook. The problem isn't that you can't pass referendum. The problem is the state isn't providing enough funding for the school. And every time we bring something like this forward, I think we're just letting the state off the hook and putting more pressure on the property taxpayers. Also, not that I totally disagree with taking seasonal or putting seasonal rec back on, but any time in that property tax system that you pull on one lever, it has all sorts of unknown impacts until you really look at it on all other things of the property tax. So we need a lot more thorough discussion, and I guess I'd ask members to vote no.
Further discussion to the bill amendment. Representative Solberg.
Your information is I have a cabin, and I got this tax statement, and the largest increase in my tax statement went to the state from the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
Not to fall my road, not to do anything else, but went to the state.
Madam Chair.
Representative Young.
Well, I didn't think that the amendment would prevail, and I want to thank staff for getting it ready. But I couldn't hardly, after listening to Representative Murphy, wherever she went, I couldn't hardly not do this amendment. But, Madam Chair, we don't have any bait on the hook, and we don't have any bait in the bait box here. And I agree with you, Representative Marquardt. But we don't have anything to go fishing with. And next year they tell us we're going to even have a bigger budget, so even though the state, we let them off the hook, we never had to fish or bait. We might as well cut the line and go home. Because by the time the state gets done ponying around, trying to figure out how to fund education the way we're going now, we'll have all our schools consolidated. Kids will be traveling 50, 60 miles one way. See, my wife already drives to her school 35 miles one way, and the next school down the road is 18 miles further, and that's common in those districts, in those rural. Well, you know what rural districts are about. And so we don't have any bait. We might as well just cut the line and go home. So you don't have to vote on this. I made my speech.
Further discussion of the A3? Is Representative Gill, are you withdrawing the A3, or would you like
to... I'll withdraw it so that we don't have to have a vote and have people hung out on a vote.
Okay, well, Representative Jill withdraws the A3 amendment. Further discussion...
I'm letting the committee off the hook on this one. How's that?
I'm sure you'll bring us right back in a couple of weeks here during markup. Further discussion on Representative Yarros' bill. Representative Yarros, closing comments. I really do want to thank the folks who came down. I'm sorry it's a late night. We will continue to consider this. Representative Yarros is on this committee. We work closely with the entire delegation. Representative Jill is here. Representative Murphy was here, Senator Solon, Senator Bach is engaged, and we will all be thinking together. Representative Yarros, closing comments.
Thank you. I want to thank everybody, too. This overbuilding will cause a huge operational problem in Duluth. There are already $5 million in the hole this coming year, and this large plan, physical plan will make things worse.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Is that Representative Bill?
Well, I think maybe Representative Yarros would have liked my amendment then.
He might have. But we appreciate the withdrawal for now because we know the issue will come back. Thank you, Representative Yarros. We're going to lay your bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thanks to everybody who was here from the Duluth tonight. We appreciate it.
I'm saving.
Okay, so I'm going to move House File 3030. Welcome to the committee, Representative Morgan. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'd like to thank Representative Pearson for letting me cut in line ahead of him. I hope that we'll be brief with this bill. House File 3030, members, is a wheelage tax exemption for motorized scooters and bicycles and electric-assisted bicycles. Currently, under law in the counties that have authority to levy a wheelage tax,
only motorcycles are exempt. And a constituent of mine who owns a motorized bicycle inquired as to why his vehicle was not also exempt, because it has very low impact on roads and has good gas mileage, just like motorcycles do. And I said, that's a very good idea, and that's why I'm here before you today to request your support for this bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Morgan. Any questions for Representative Morgan? Testify as to Representative Morgan, for or against. Members, I think if you look at lines 1.16 through 1.20, you can see what's already exempt, and so Representative Morgan is adding another to the list. Any questions for House Bill 3030? If not, Representative Morgan, Representative Earhart.
What county is this in?
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, this would exempt that in all the counties that currently have the authority and currently levy the wheel tax.
Every county metro.
Right.
Representative Earhart. So it's adding down here the motorcycles, motorized bikes that are exempt now. He's adding, I asked him today, I said, it's Vespas. I said, is it Segways? I said, is it the kids in my neighborhood who ride around those little motorized scooters that we all worry that we're going to hit them with our cars? So he's adding to that list, if that's an accurate...
Yes, ma'am. So any of those motorized vehicles that currently are subject to the wheel tax would be exempted from this list.
Okay. Representative Earhart, you understand that? Got it? Okay. Further discussion? If not, we're going to lay out House Bill 3030. Welcome. Thank you, Representative Morgan. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Thank you. And Representative Thiessen, I will move House Bill 2467. And Representative Thiessen, he is sort of the hero because he let everyone go ahead of him. Representative Thiessen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The heart of this bill is really in Section 11. The basic idea here, the Metropolitan Airports Commission has authority under current law to levy property taxes on the 7 county metro area counties. This bill would remove that authority. That's kind of the gist of it. And just kind of to frame up the issue a little bit more about why this came up, and it really has nothing to do with a recent event. This was introduced a year ago. But it kind of does bear a little bit, I suppose, on that discussion. The bonding authority and the general obligation bonding authority that the MAC has is what allows them, I think, to negotiate and finance deals that go larger than just operations at the airport. So it allows the MAC to get involved in deals that have implications beyond just operations at the airport. For instance, the headquarters at Northwest would be an example. And so I think that the question really before the committee is, if to me, is two things. One, should those kind of issues, is that the proper form? Is the MAC the proper form? It's kind of a governance issue to be making these kind of decisions, or ought these decisions that are not just about airport operations, really should they be coming back to the state of Minnesota, to the legislature to work through. And the second thing is, the MAC really, or the airport, the main airport really is a statewide asset, and the issues around the airport are statewide issues, but the authority to levy property taxes is just on the 7 county metro area. And is that appropriate as well? We had some of this discussion yesterday, I think, in front of about the Met Council and their authority as an unelected body to levy property taxes. I think that there's some overlap on some of those issues as well. So this would not affect any current outstanding debt obligations. It would just be prospective going forward, taking away that property tax authority. They do have revenue bond authority as well. So they can always issue bonds for capital improvement projects that are paid for with concessions and lease revenues and other things revenues generated at the airport. And to be fair, they haven't actually imposed property taxes in a long, long time. But, you know, depending on what happens with mergers or if there's problems in the future, if someone were to default, for instance, Northwest were to default on its obligations under the loan that the state has given them, there is a possibility. I mean, the kind of final default are the taxpayers of Bloomington and Minneapolis and Hennepin County and all the 7 counties in the metro area. So that's the gist of the bill. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Chief. And so the revenue bonds, you're not repealing their ability to
we're,
do that.
We're
okay.
Moving their authority to revenue bonds, actually.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Appreciate it. Are there questions for Representative Thiessen? Testimony for or against Representative Thiessen's bill? Sure, there must be. If you wouldn't still be here. It looks like you're from Duluth now. Okay.
Welcome.
Hello, I am Susan Warner-Dooley, Deputy Executive Director for Finance and Administration for the Metropolitan Airports Commission.
Madam Chair, Representatives, my name is Steve Bush. I'm Director of Finance for the Metropolitan Airports Commission.
Okay, thank you for being here. We are here today to talk about the GO Bonding Authority. It's an authority that we look at as the reserve authority that we have in case we got into long-term or short-term difficulties to maintain the viability, long-term financial viability of the airport systems and maintain a safe operating system. I think it's important first to understand the nature of this bonding authority. We have bonding authority that could result in taxation, but if I could have Steve explain that even if we use this authority, we have to repay the taxpayers.
Oh, Madam Chair, Representative.
I apologize. Can you please get your last name for us? I didn't get it. Was it Boot? Could you tell us your last name? We want to like to get
Bush.
Bush. Okay.
As in B.
Sorry about that, Mr. Bush. Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative, we currently, in the statute that we have regarding general obligation bonds, we currently have $55 million left of the original authorization, and that's all that we have remaining under the general obligation authority. The general obligation is backed, is a AAA rated bond that we've issued in the past, and is backed by the seven taxing ability of the seven county metro area. In the event, I could not find the last time we used the taxing authority on the general obligation bonds. We did use it on our maintenance and operation in 1969. In the event we would have to activate a tax in the seven county metro area, That would have to be repaid to all of the counties at a 6% interest rate from the date that the taxes were instituted. So it's in essence a loan on a loan in that event. We currently have three general obligation bonds outstanding. One of those expires in 2011. The next one expires in 2015, and the last one is the big Northwest issues, our Series 15, which will be fully funded in 2020. Now, we have not, back in the mid-90s, when the legislature moved on the 2020 expansion of the airport where it is, they also granted us authority to issue general airport revenue bonds, and since that time, That is the sole debt issuance that we have used, the general airport revenue bonds to finance the 2020 plan. We currently have about $1.8 billion outstanding, of which $1.5 billion to $1.6 billion is general airport revenue bonds, and about $275 million, which is general obligation. As Ms. Warner Dooley stated, we view the $55 million authorized level that we have remaining as kind of a safety deposit box, that in the event of something that we needed to do to issue those bonds in whatever it be, whether it be the merger or a catastrophe, that it's from the finance perspective, it's being very prudent to keep that authorization where it is. And again, it is fully repayable to all of the counties with us at 6%.
Okay, so question for the testifiers, all representatives, and Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do you pay back something or other? I didn't quite understand that. If, in fact, you need to pay the counties back, you have to levy for that to pay them back, or what kind of a circular thing is that?
Mr. Bush?
Madam Chair, Representative, what we would do is we would have to go to the counties and get the tax assessed, and that would go on the taxpayers, and then that the tax levies would come back to us in order to pay the debt service. During that time that we've issued the tax, we would have to do something with our rates and charges, revenues and expenses in order to generate the money sufficient to pay the debt service, and at that time also generate funds sufficient to pay that back at a 6% interest rate.
Captain Earhart?
No, I guess that's enough. Thank you.
Further questions? Further testimony from the public for or against? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Minister. Just a couple things. I mean, I think that what you heard is that they don't use it, that they haven't used it, but it's out there in the event there's a merger. For instance, the merger goes south and Northwest doesn't repay its bonds, or there's a catastrophe. In that case, I think it ought to be the state that makes those decisions. I mean, just as an example, last year when they renegotiated the deal, the MAC renegotiated the deal with Northwest, not the state of Minnesota, you know, they gave $200 million in concessions to Northwest Airlines. I think that's a decision that we ought to be making here at the state. I think that this bonding authority is the thing that allows them, that gives them the capacity to do that kind of financing. They do have the revenue bond authority. I think that's a much more appropriate way for them to back their bonds as opposed to putting it on the taxpayers. And I think Representative Earhart raises a very good point. They can repay these taxes, but it doesn't go back to the taxpayers. It goes back to the counties. It'll never get back in the pockets of the actual taxpayers. So I think it's a little false to say that, you know, anything that we take from the county taxpayers will get paid back to them. So I guess the point that I would, you know, the real point, they don't use it, they haven't used it. They did use it to back the Northwest deal, but that gave them more authority than I think they ought to have. I think we ought to let the MAC have revenue bond authority and finance it the way most that they ought to be financing it, and not let them tax the seven county metro taxpayers. So that's the gist of it.
Thank you, Representative. And I was, you know, you make a good point about the statewide approach as opposed to the seven county metro, and I similarly have a bill to have the MSG and the Holman Field start paying into the state general tax because they're being exempt from that. And my bill also was introduced before the merger talk. So there's a number of airport policies that we're looking at as it relates to taxes in front of the tax committee this year, and now the central merger has, I suppose, upped the ante. But we are going to consider all of the ways that we are giving corporate subsidies out, and then your bill folds in now in the property tax piece. So we appreciate you bringing it before us. Is there further discussion? If not, we'll lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax. So thank you, Representative Yarrow, our Representative Thiessen. We appreciate your patience. And we forgot Representative Yarrow has another bill.
Well,
did you want to hear it now?
Okay, well, if you want to.
Sure, Representative Yarrow's moves House File 2781 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you. Madam Chair, this was requested by our local Red Cross chapter, but I think it applies to statewide, but and it that to exempt from vehicles from tax and fees for emergency vehicles. I guess the fiscal note says that it doesn't have much of an impact on the budget.
Okay. Questions for Representative Yarrow on this bill? Testifiers for or against this bill? Representative Lanning and Simpson. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Yarrow's is the House Research Summary just specifically mentions Red Cross. Are there other, does this cover other nonprofit emergency services?
Well, it would be fine with me, but I think it just applies to, let's see.
Okay, Mr. Michael. Representative Yarrow, can we have Mr. Michael just kind of tell a quick answer for Representative Lanning?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, it's any nonprofit. I simply put in the summary Red Cross as an example, and it so happens that Red Cross is the Duluth chapter of Red Cross is the one who brought this forward. But other nonprofits that are engaged in disaster response would qualify.
Okay, Representative Lanning. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Michael, you had the example of approximately 20 vehicles. Is that just in the Duluth area, or are you talking 20 vehicles statewide?
Okay. All right. Further, anybody from the public on 2781? If not, we're going to lay over House File 2781 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And I'm going to move House File 4078, which was Hornstein. We told them we'd move it. But before us, now we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.